Hey, hello everybody. We are in the green room. Rodney and Vinny, V. And we will have a guest a little later on. Rodney, how you doing, bro?
Doing well, Vinny.
You haven't been here for a couple of weeks.
No, I'm afraid I've been
traveling, man.
Traveling, man.
Yeah, how was back in Baton Rouge? Right.
Oh, I was in New Orleans. We had a great time.
Yeah.
Yeah, my friend was celebrating his 30th wedding anniversary. It was great. He hired a live band and catered and had about 50 people. It was a blast. New Orleans is a great town.
Uh-huh.
It's just a great town.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Especially
I was there a few times.
If you're a music lover, it's a great place.
I know. The music comes out of the doors, pours out of the doors.
So the band that my friend hired does reggae versions of 80s pop songs.
Huh?
So just about any kind of 80s pop song, they do like a reggae version to it.
Yeah,
that was their, that's their shtick. A really good band, really good band. But
I like reggae.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. And they were from there, or they just...
No, went... they're from New Orleans. They're a local band.
Oh, okay.
The guitarist is lives down the street from a friend of mine.
Well, what about your friend? The guy who got married?
Yes.
Is he from there?
No. He's I've known him since second grade.
Okay.
Yeah, we grew up together.
Okay. So he lives up here?
He lives in New Orleans.
Well, that's not just asking. Who's on first?
I was just going to ask that. What's on second?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I think Rodney's a little confused by the whole new setup here. We're on PANJ TV.
I know.
Yes, that was the voice of Rob Bell.
But I'm here in the control room.
Owner of this Thea studio.
The voice of God.
Yeah. So he would like.
I have to say, it's, you know, this is kind of brings back memories of the old studio, but.
Yeah,
but in miniature form.
The table's a little smaller.
In a slightly smaller format.
Yes.
It's bringing back some memories, though. I kind of miss the dining room table. That was had a very nice view from it. So, but this will work.
I think that somebody just hung up on us.
That wouldn't be.
Why would you think that?
Yeah, I just heard it blink. Did you hang him up?
No, I didn't touch him.
Oh.
Okay.
Well, hopefully.
Jeff, if you're out there.
Call me back, Jeff.
Call us back.
But he doesn't have the phone.
I think he's still hooked up.
Oh, okay.
Are you hooked up, Jeff?
But the audio is on, and he's not saying, oh, actually, wait a minute. Here we go. Audio, are you there, Jeff? Hello, Jeff.
Look on my phone. That's the way you'll know.
Space to Jeff.
Well, anyway.
While
our engineer is getting.
Which number do you want me to call here? He hung up on you.
Call up his headphone, his cell phone.
I don't know what they both have. 908-370, this one?
Yeah.
All right, here you go.
Eeny, meeny, miny, mo.
Give it a try.
Yeah.
So, yes, Nora.
But this is interesting. A first day back in the studio.
I know.
You're not coming up on my...
not coming up, huh?
Is that you, Jeff?
That's Jeff. Me. I'm trying to...
catch us on the TV.
I clicked on Listen Live, and it's just not.
Not coming.
You can't listen to yourself when you're already on the radio.
No, he's trying to see us on the computer.
It's not.
Okay.
Remember, we discussed that.
Okay, it's not on the computer, bro.
Okay, so I'm just going to shut down the computer.
Yeah, you just shut it down. That is the voice of Jeff Schreiber, who is going to be giving us a lesson in crypto coin. It's a big thing to some people. Some people don't even know what it is. Did you ever hear? You've heard of it.
I've certainly heard of it. I don't quite understand it, but it's. I've definitely heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's an interesting concept, but you know, I'm not sure how practical it is for the average everyday person. But
well,
Jeff is going to tell us.
We're going to find out how practical. He's been involved in this for quite a few years.
You know, I know Bitcoin, you know,
shot up
and then kind of crashed. I don't know where it is right now.
I don't know if it crashed, but
I think it was nearing like about $20,000, and then after then it just.
Well, it crashed, but it's still around $9,000.
Yes.
If you call that a crash off of a $35 investment.
I suppose.
Yeah. So.
It's all relative.
Yep. Relative to what? What is this book we have here?
I don't know. It looks very nice, though. It's a great set piece. Heritage. It makes us look more educated. But
that's just, we have the Skycam. Now I'm showing it right now.
Oh, okay.
So you could put anything on that table. No, on the table.
Okay.
You can put anything on. Put something on the table.
There it is.
That's okay.
Wow, that's kind of creepy.
You see it?
Yeah.
Oh, there it is.
There it is. The Skycam.
The Skycam. We're being looked at from all angles.
I know. That's what really creeps me out here.
Jeffrey, are you back?
I'm here.
Okay, cool.
This could be Rodney's last show. I don't think he's enjoying the video version of this.
How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing great.
So tell us about yourself, Jeff.
Yeah, Rodney doesn't know you.
Who the hell are you, Jeff?
I'm wonderful. Well, I've got a long story to tell. It would take you'd probably need a few weeks or months to learn my whole story, but
well, give us the 3-minute version.
You know, in a 1-hour radio show, gonna have to just limit it to, you know, just like one specific thing, which is basically what is my passion and my right now it's what I'm doing as far as work goes, which is the world of blockchain assets, which is basically another way for referring to cryptocurrency, which is also alternative digital currency. And it's something that has been around now for close to 10 years. In fact, it was first, Bitcoin was first introduced to an online forum of cryptography geeks in 2008. Right as the financial crisis was really starting to take effect, and people were really getting freaked out, and the markets were crashing, and all of a sudden the big banks show up at the United States Congress and ask for $750 billion to bail them out for things that they had actually been involved in and had created that were losing money, I mean, bleeding money profusely.
Are you talking about 2008?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Right exactly at that time was when Bitcoin was introduced. And I'm pretty sure that it would the person who invented it, no one's really sure if it's a person or if it's a group of people. Or some people say it's not a person at all. It was a robot. But
I can see that.
He went by a pseudonym of Satoshi Nakamoto. and he went on this forum and he presented a white paper about a financial network, a digital currency network, which is completely peer-to-peer, which means that it doesn't require the oversight, authority, or control by banks or governments or any third party for that matter. And at first, it was just, for the first couple of years, it was just really like a hobby for people who were, you know, computer nerds and cyberpunks and libertarians were the first people that really took interest in it. You know, people that just feel like that the whole financial system that we have set up is really a wreck. And it's also very crooked. And that's coming to pass. As time goes on. And 2008, 2007, 2008, 2009 was really the first indication that, to quote William Shakespeare, something was rotten in Denmark. Uh-huh. And so you have this currency that basically it's created on a computer through a network of computers. And it's as transactions take place, the various members of the network who have separate computers with specific hardware and software are able to together verify the transaction, leaving out the need for a third party like a bank.
But what? How is a transaction actually accomplished? I mean, who would know how to use a coin? You know, the thing called a Bitcoin. I mean,
who would know how to use it?
Yeah, I mean, how is it created?
Okay, well, it's created through a process called mining.
Mining. Oh, mining.
But it's not like you're going into a mountain with a bunch of picks and shovels and, you know, and going and mining out, computer digits.
Got it.
It's
X's and O's.
Yeah, it's something that's on the internet. And it's as people basically the process, the technology that's behind it, which allows for this to happen, is called the blockchain, which was a new concept that was invented by Satoshi, or first presented by Satoshi.
Whoever he is.
Yeah, he disappeared like about a year and a half after he came on the scene with a million Bitcoin, no less. Of the 21 million that will ever be produced by design, Satoshi has a million of those. But no one knows who he is, where he is, or even if he is.
So how does blockchain work? Can I just, you know, buy some computer equipment and get the right software and just start cranking out my own Bitcoin?
There was a time when you could do that. There was a time when you could do that. But because Bitcoin went from, like I said, just a hobby of, you know, computer nerds and people like that to something which right now has a market cap of close to $400 billion. Well, the whole cryptocurrency industry is close to $400 billion. Wow. It's become very competitive. So right now, mining is primarily done by people who are experts who put together farms of computers, you know, just warehouses filled with computers. It's very... It's very expensive to run the electricity, both to run the machines and also to cool the machines.
So what are these machines doing? Obviously, when you have the Department of the Treasury, they have printing presses and they print out money. So you have money and you have coins. So how is Bitcoin, which is essentially kind of this ephemeral, you know, data somewhere. I mean, how does this work?
Well, it's the thing is that it's open source, okay, which is a very important feature, is that the whole process is open source. So everything is transparent, except for one thing. It's anonymous. So you see every transaction with Bitcoin and the other coins that have followed, which are, you know, all based on the same, you know, on the same blockchain principle because it was open source. Everything that has ever been, every transaction that's ever taken place is on the blockchain and is accessible to anyone who has a computer, an internet connection.
Okay, so are there now a finite number of Bitcoin?
Yeah.
Okay, so today, are there newly minted Bitcoins?
Mm-hmm, there are.
Okay, so how do you create a Bitcoin?
Okay, well, the way that a Bitcoin is created is right now you have a network, and you have transactions taking place round the clock, 24/7, 365 days a year. You have transactions taking place. And every transaction that takes place, which is basically you're not moving something from you're not moving money from one computer to another computer. All you're doing is you gain control over the keys to the blockchain. And that's what someone who has Bitcoin has, is that they have control in their wallet of so many Bitcoins.
Okay, I understand that. And if they want to spend them. So at some point, I bought some Bitcoin. But uh-huh. What about the person who wants to create Bitcoin?
Right, that's the miner. That's what I'm trying to explain.
That's the miner. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So what does this miner do?
Well, the miner is basically receives an announcement of sorts that the transaction has taken place, and he gets in line to, along with other miners, to confirm that the transaction is legitimate. And when you've got multiple confirmations, the transaction goes through. Okay? So the person who is able to solve a very complex algorithmic problem, which is presented to the miner. And the miner is not doing this in his head or with his own computational skills. This is all being done through the computers and the software that he's using. But as this algorithm gets solved, the first person or the first miner to solve the problem basically raises their hand, and they're awarded the Bitcoin. And right now, this is with the Bitcoin network. Again, there are numerous other cryptocurrencies now, and some of them are successful. Some of them are going to be successful. a vast majority of them will fail or will just be novelty items, but will never really have much value. But so when the person is awarded the Bitcoin right now, there are about every 10 minutes, there are 12 and a half Bitcoin created throughout the whole internet. And that's how it works. About every 10 minutes, you have 12 and a half Bitcoins that are created, that are awarded to these miners. And the way that the whole system was set up was that about every four years, the number of Bitcoin that will be mined every 10 minutes will be cut in half. So in the summer of 2016, which was the last time that there was a halving, as it's known, up until that point for 4 years, there had been 25 Bitcoin created every 10 minutes. Now you have 12 and a half. So in 2020, that number is going to go down to 6.25. And in 2024, it's going to go down to 3.125. So
what happens when it goes down to zero?
It eventually will. I mean, it eventually will, and around the year 2140, they estimate it'll go down to complete. It'll completely be zero.
And what does that mean? And what that means is no more Bitcoins to
that's
be
it.
Gotten?
They'll have reached the 21 million coins that were,
initially
that the system was designed to produce, and there will be no more.
So
that will be it.
So who set the rule that there's going to be X number of bitcoins. And what's
the that was all set up by Satoshi Nakamoto when he devised the system.
So who's
and the network
a phantom?
So who's to stop someone from monkeying with the system? And miraculously, there's going to be 31 million bitcoins instead of 21 million.
It's all hard-coded. The only thing that can happen is that other people who are part of the network can choose to deviate from the original blueprint and start a fork off of the blockchain, and this is happening all the time now. So right now there are going to be 21 million, and right now it's about 16 or 17 million Bitcoin of the original Bitcoin that have been produced. There are, I would say, at least a dozen forks of the original Bitcoin, which one of them, Bitcoin Cash, which was basically a year ago, it forked off of Bitcoin, and it's the second most successful coin, and has a very high market cap, and the price of the Bitcoin Cash is about $1,100-$1,200 a coin. Hold on, I can look it up real quick and tell you.
So when you say fork, this is like a deviation. This is a totally different currency.
Well, it's a different currency. Coin? Yes, it's a different currency. It has different rules, and the rules that Bitcoin Cash, which is I think is going to be very successful, and is showing it because it's. Hold on, just a second. I'm just looking at the price of. Oops, wrong. Right now, Bitcoin itself is going for about just under $7,600 a coin.
Wow.
And Bitcoin Cash is about $1,300 a coin now. So it's the second highest priced coin. And there's a whole bunch of other Bitcoins. And then there's a lot of other coins, and there's a lot of coins that have different utilities. And some of them aren't even referred to as coins. They're referred to as tokens. Because remember this thing I was talking to you about, the blockchain?
Yes.
Well, the blockchain is not just something that's going to be used as a technology for a peer-to-peer currency, which is what it was, which was the original the original application. But the blockchain is going to be used.
Excuse me, guys, you got a phone call.
Got a phone call. Hold on.
Go ahead, caller.
Hey, my name's Ellen, and I am very interested in this topic. I just watched the documentary about it on Netflix last night. And my question is, what would attract someone to this if it's not the anonymity that goes along with it? Like, can't really be traced. Like, why would someone want to get involved? I don't even know. I'm trying to understand, how do you take your money and buy Bitcoin? Because then that's traced.
Right. If it's coming out of the bank, then there's a trace.
Jeff, right. Can you understand?
Or if you pay it with a credit card, there's a.
Well, that's a bank too.
Yeah.
So, I was in this documentary. They pointed out how there was a website that took you to another website where they were selling drugs, and because you could literally buy anything because it was not traceable, and then that person went to jail, and that's when a lot of it started going south. But, and that mostly libertarians were very involved in this because of the personal freedoms and the fact that, they weren't being traced. But I don't know why you would want to get involved in this unless you really just did not want anyone to know what you were purchasing. And it's just very confusing to me.
It's very confusing to a lot of people.
Your money and convert it to Bitcoin.
Yeah. Jeff, can you hear that? Did you hear that question?
I couldn't really hear it. I'm sorry.
Oh, you're kidding.
So the issue is traceability of Bitcoin, the transactions, uh-huh. People buying Bitcoins.
Buy it with your currency?
So your own currency? How is that not traceable?
Well, like I said, it's completely open source, and the blockchain, which is where all the transactions are recorded, is 100% transparent. So every single transaction that's ever taken place is completely there for people to see it.
Okay, so it's hard to hide then.
Yeah, well, I mean, there is anonymity to it. So you can hide your identity, but it's getting harder to do that just because unless you buy Bitcoin from someone else, but if you buy them from an exchange or soon you'll be able to buy it from Goldman Sachs. JP Morgan Chase will be selling Bitcoin soon. But any place like that where you buy Bitcoin, it's going to be, you know, you're going to have to fill out forms and get verification, and there'll be a record of your transaction buying it from someone. Now there are some coins that are now up and running that are what are known as privacy coins. I'm personally very interested in those. And these are coins that are completely untraceable. And you can't even find out where they've been or if when they leave your hands, where they're going. It's impossible to trace them. And they're quite popular. They're quite popular. And, you know, there's a part of this movement. There's a part of this movement is to move away from having a government-issued currency as having a monopoly on right. all of our wealth and everything we have of value.
But I also understand that they're trying to regulate it, or they are regulating it.
There is a lot of regulation, and there's right. going to be a lot more.
There yeah, I heard that they want to tax it. I heard the yeah, government's working. Correct. Yeah, they want to tax
that,
it.
Right.
They've already made, and not just this government, every government, and some governments like China and India have really, really come down hard and have tried to, you know, ban exchanges and
I thought ban, China banned it. Yeah,
you know, what are called ICOs, which is where people, you know, people produce new coins and they raise money to do it, and you know, those two countries have been very, and the U.S. also has been very, you know, has really put their foot down about it. Whereas some countries like Japan and some countries in South America, Argentina in particular, where they realize the necessity of an alternative currency. They see that what we have is failing, and it's failing badly. And in order for this new currency to get up and running, to have the freedom that it needs to really find its place in this new economy, there needs to be a little bit of lax, just to allow for, you know, just for to allow the technology to develop and grow. Yeah. And you're going to see that happening. Because this is going to get bigger. I tell you, I mean, 3 years into this, I've seen enormous amount of growth.
How?
And
well, 1 second, Jeff, we got a yeah. question.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm curious. I mean, you said something like the system is failing.
It's failing. It hasn't failed yet, but it's failing.
I think we've had coins since, what, the ancient Greeks? So we've had financial transactions going on since the ancient Greeks based on one kind of currency or another, based on either a local government or a national government. And how is the system failing?
Well, the system that I'm talking about is not the system of money. I mean, basically, before there were coins, we used to barter with, you know, a lot of other things, salt,
wampum,
you know, yeah, I mean, all kinds of stuff. I mean, they bartered fish. Some places would just exchange fish for everything else or whatever. But what I'm talking about, the system that I'm talking about, is the central banking, which basically, I guess it started with like the Bank of England, which was what the American Revolution was trying to get away from. And the U.S. basically went down the slope when the Federal Reserve was created in 2010, and the Federal Reserve Act was passed in 2013. And basically what it did was it gave a bunch of private bankers, perfect legitimate rights to steal a vast majority of wealth from the American people. And
how was that?
Well, I mean, to explain it, like, again, to explain something like this would take a little bit of time, but the Federal Reserve, I mean, people think that the Federal Reserve, it's in Washington, D.C., it's a big building, it's right over by, you know, it's right over by the State Department, it's, you know, that must be, it must be a federal agency. But guess what? The Federal Reserve is as much a federal agency as Federal Express.
So how is a system of currency that's been developed by someone who may not exist somehow more secure and more legitimate?
Well, number one, like I said, it has with the Federal Reserve, whenever they need to, times get tough, they just print more money, and they can print as much as they want. And this sounds like, oh, that's a great thing. Well, but the only problem is that the more money that you have in circulation, the greater the inflation is. And this is what's going on right now in Venezuela. And
China does that all the time.
You know, it happened in Cyprus, and it's going to happen in more and more places. And so by having a free rein where the Federal Reserve, just out of nothing, prints this money, it's not backed. A lot of people still think that the U.S. dollar is backed by gold. But we went off the gold standard a long time ago. Actually, the final nail in the coffin was in 1971 when Richard Nixon announced that we were no longer going to be honoring the gold standard. But it had already.
I have one more question. I was going to hang up. Can I ask one more question?
Sure. Go on. Go right ahead.
Okay. I understand that there's a finite amount, number of Bitcoin, but that within those finite amount of Bitcoin, there is more Bitcoin. And each individual Bitcoin can be multiplied. Is that true?
Somebody's got to tell me what she said.
From each Bitcoin, can each Bitcoin be multiplied into more Bitcoin?
No. It's like I said, there's a finite number.
Right, and but then so, what I was reading is that within that number, you can take each individual one and multiply it.
You could take each individual one and multiply it, is what she said.
I'm not really sure what she's saying. I don't really quite understand the.
I didn't understand it either. That's why I'm asking. it's very confusing, and that's why they said it will stay around, even though much of it disappeared.
It's also not insured by the FDIC. you know, if you lose money in a bank, you know, you're insured up to $500,000, right? Bitcoin is not has no backing by any kind of a federal agency, so the money could just disappear.
No, it could. And there's also, I mean, this is the way.
Thank you, caller. The caller just hung up. Thank you, Ellen. Was that her name?
Yeah, that was EJ.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Okay. The way I see it is this. Years ago, 25, 30 years ago, there was this new kid in town called the Internet. And most people didn't really know what it was. People were starting to hear about it. And, you know, but once again, you know, the computer geeks and the nerds were the first people to really get into it. And I remember walking into some, because I got interested in it in about 1993, 94. I was in my old business, I was talking to somebody and I said, you know, I just discovered this thing called the Internet. It's really fascinating. And this college professor asked me, well, what is it? I said, well, it's where computers all around the world.
There's another caller.
Hold on, hello? Jeff. We got another caller.
Say hello to the caller.
Hi, my name's Harry, and I think I can answer a couple of the questions the previous caller had, actually.
Okay.
Go for it.
I heard her asking about anonymity and how they could be private. And I think one of the key answers to that question in terms of you purchasing them with cash, which is true, that would leave a paper trail, is a lot of the people that got in on the ground mined them themselves. So they didn't have to buy them from anyone. And if you mined the coin yourself, there's no trail of you purchasing it from anyone. And to add on to that bullet point, you have to kind of keep them in your own coin wallet. You could use a wallet online. There are lots of sites where you keep your coins. But of course, then someone could hack into the site, or the site knows your trail, or whatnot. There are private coin wallets you can keep for yourself. And then I think her second question was something about multiplying bitcoins, and I think what she was trying to get at is you can own a percentage of a bitcoin. So a person could own like a 0.01% of a bitcoin, and another person could own 2% of a bitcoin. You don't have to buy them in whole coin increments, just like you can have a cent of a dollar or 5 cents of a dollar. And that allows there for people to have well beyond the number of just 1 million units of the currency. There's 21 million whole units, but they can be fractions of a unit, if that makes sense.
Okay. Thank you.
That's great. Yeah. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you, guys. I really like the show right now. This is a really interesting conversation.
Great.
Just to repeat, apparently Jeff can't hear the callers. The caller said that you can actually mine your own Bitcoin. You don't have to go through an exchange if you're very good on computers. And also that you can own a percentage of a Bitcoin.
Yes, that's true. You don't have to buy a whole Bitcoin. You can buy 1/100 million of a Bitcoin, as a matter of fact. Like the dollar has 2 decimal points to the right. Bitcoin has 8.
It sounds a little confusing, man.
I'll tell you, you know what? It's all confusing until the light goes off in your head.
Yeah.
And then you start to see this and you start to realize that, you know, this is really the future. This is where, you know, it's like we're dealing with, you know, we live in the 21st century and we have 21st century technology. And yet our financial system is from the freaking Middle Ages. And basically a lot of the things that are going on in the world right now that are not so nice and really need to change are a byproduct of an archaic financial system, which you remember Occupy Wall Street.
Sure.
You remember what that was all about.
Yeah.
It was like, why do 1% of the population have more than the other 99% combined? Well, actually, it's not. That's not really true. It's not 1%. It's 1% of 1%.
But Jeff, how will this benefit to make it more even when, you know, as you go
because
along?
Because as the appeal for it grows, and when I say the appeal for it, I don't just mean Bitcoin. I refer to Bitcoin like some people used to refer to Coca-Cola, as just a term for a soft drink. You know, let's go get a Coke. Bitcoin is just, it was the first, you know, it was the first coin, and it's still the largest, but it's not necessarily going to be the final, it's not going to be the, you know, the final, you know,
result.
Standing
manifestation.
Point. Yeah, it might not be. In fact, I don't think it is. But the point that I'm trying to make is that the wealth that is being generated from this technology and from the industry behind it is growing in leaps and bounds. And more people, especially younger people, who don't feel that they're being left with a future. They just take a look at what's, you know, the way that this world is set up and the way that everything is rigged, and they don't see that there's much, you know, much hope with the current system. So they're really, really drawn to something new, and a lot of them are looking outside the box. And if there was ever something where you could really say is a great example of looking outside the box, it's cryptocurrency. Because it's just seeing that you don't have to follow you don't have to follow these rules. Just like if I was, you know, let's say you're growing a whole bunch of corn and I'm growing a whole bunch of spinach, and I'll, you know, we decide I'll give you so much spinach for your corn, and that becomes our currency. Somebody could just grow a lot of spinach and just trade spinach for,
I'm surprised you're not using marijuana as one of the commodities.
Well, I'm just, I guess I could use that. That would be a good example, for sure. But here you have a system that is and a network that's set up, that's been established, that's growing, that it's getting fine-combed, and it's being made more simple. It's being made more secure. It's being made more, recognized. And as more and more people get into it, and more people find that they're going to be able to spend it, which, by the way, one of the main projects that I'm working on right now is a marketplace. This is what, Vinny, I'm going to be teaching you in the next few weeks. And helping you get started with. But there's going to be a marketplace where you're going to be able to, not just with Bitcoin, but with any one of the leading 20 or leading 30 cryptocurrencies, you're going to be able to shop for just about anything on the internet.
So as far as these cryptocurrencies, are they attractive to criminals?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
So are cryptocurrencies attractive to people engaged in criminal enterprises?
Yeah, but not as much as cash is.
Okay, so why? What makes cryptocurrencies attractive to someone engaged in crime?
The fact that it's anonymous.
Anonymous.
So
just
is
like
this
cash.
Is this a good thing?
Is cash a good thing?
I mean, you talk about the many upsides of cryptocurrencies, and having kind of a system that's non-governmental out in the internet sphere, but doesn't that also make it easier for criminals to essentially launder money and do what they do?
That's a point. My counterpoint is that
I'm just curious, does it or not?
It does, but a lot more crime, a great deal more crime takes place with the United States dollar. Far more than then takes place with Bitcoin.
So, so would a smart criminal do more business in crypto, in cryptocurrencies?
At this point, no.
Why is that?
Maybe a small-time criminal.
Okay.
Might. In fact, the very first, very popular site where Bitcoin really took off was called the Silk Road. Did you ever hear of it?
Yes.
It was on the dark web.
Yep.
And the Silk Road was a website where you could go and buy just about anything, drugs related. I mean, I don't think they sold guns or weapons, but they were selling, you know, all kinds of drugs, and people were able to to do it anonymously. And so, you know, the point that you can say, well, yeah, you have something that it facilitates crime. Yes, that's a point. But I would say this much, that 99.something% of the transactions that take place with Bitcoin are legitimate transactions.
And how do you know that?
Because I study it. I mean,
How do you know that a particular transaction isn't being done by a drug dealer in Colombia as opposed to a car dealer in Colombia?
If a car dealer is doing transactions with cryptocurrency,
mm-hmm.
and they want to stay within the law, they're gonna report their business honestly and legitimate.
Okay.
A drug dealer will not. But that's the way. I mean, they do the same thing with cash.
No, I understand that. But how do you know that 1% of all the cryptocurrency transactions aren't criminal? How do you know it's not 10 or 15 or 33 or 80%?
Well, isn't there a way? I mean, you were saying before it's very transparent. So
yeah, you can. If the government wants to put the resources into catching you with, you know, using Bitcoin for criminal activities or for not reporting taxes on your capital gains, they can find you. They can find you. It's like I said, it's anonymous, but it's transparent. So everything is there. So all they need to do is just, you know, track it.
So, but as long as it's anonymous, how do you trace it back to an individual?
Well, you can track it because you can find out where it came from, and then you can find out where it came from. And all you need to do is find someone who has, you know, where it's been acquired and spent legitimately, and start asking questions. Where did it go to? Who did you send it to? That's how they caught the guy from Silk Road. He was caught. He's doing, I think, 3 life sentences.
Wow. For money?
Huh?
For money, huh?
Yeah.
That's incredible. Yeah. Money is more valuable than life.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there's a lot of people that feel that he was just... Remember, the governments aren't too crazy about this because they see it as a threat.
Sure. Anything that causes a threat to the government, especially their money, because that's what this government's all about, is a threat, and we don't want it.
Yeah, and they would love to squash it, but the problem is in order to squash it, they'd have to shut down the internet.
Right.
And shut down, you know, can you imagine what our lives would be like right now if there was no internet? Just think about it.
On a more practical issue, how does, let's say, 5 years ago I bought some Bitcoin and now it's time to pay for my daughter's college tuition and I need some cash, how do mm-hmm. I cash out?
There's exchanges where you can, you know, you basically register on an exchange and you can buy and sell Bitcoin. These are licensed exchanges.
Who are they licensed by?
The United States government.
Really?
Uh-huh. And that's kind of like foreign money. When you go to another country, you have to change your money into their money, so there's transference, right?
Mm-hmm.
The same thing with the changing the cash into Bitcoin, yeah, or the Bitcoin into cash.
Well, the original concept, right, Jeff, was that there was no transaction fees.
Right, and actually the transaction fees got really high for a while, but they've come down way, way down. They're down to like a penny now. Originally they were zero. And then the miners, because the miners were, it had gotten so competitive, the miners were charging, you know, exorbitant amounts of fees. But since Bitcoin Cash came along, it's gotten less competitive for the miners, so they're able to keep the transaction fees down. You know, I know it's you know, I see it's like we've been talking now for almost an hour, and it's almost like, you know, it's like we're talking around something that, to get to the heart of it, like I was saying at the beginning of this conversation, to get to the heart of this, it really takes some education. It really takes, and it's, you know, you don't need to go to school, you don't need to take classes, but you do need to research it. Just learn about it, you know. Right. Spend a couple of hours just reading it, listening to some people who are experts on it talk about it. Open up a wallet. Once you use it for the first time, it all becomes so much more clear of why this. What are the advantages of having something like this that's not run, it's not issued by the government, it's not issued by the banks, and they can't get their filthy paws on it.
So as far as somebody listening to the show, if they want to learn more about Bitcoin, can you suggest some legitimate, you know, really, you know, solid sources of information?
Yeah, I would recommend, I mean, unless you want to, you know, I might start a consultation business, but that's something I'm still considering. But I would just say go to Bitcoin.com. That's Roger Ver's. He's the founder of Bitcoin.com. And you'll get a good overview on that website. And they'll teach you how to acquire Bitcoin. They'll help you set up a secure wallet. They'll show you where you can spend it. They'll show you, you know, ways that you can use it and accept it if you're in a business. You know, they kind of have they've got a lot of the bases covered. Now, there still is a long way to go. I mean, like I said, right now we're at a point with Bitcoin equivalent to 1993, 1994 with the internet. There wasn't even a World Wide Web yet. And that's the point that we're at with cryptocurrency. We have quite a ways to go, but there is a mad dash to get to the point where it becomes mainstream.
Right.
And people start using it on a regular basis. Will be able to walk into a store. They'll have an application on their smartphone, which is either Bitcoin or another, or the wallet of another coin. They'll open up that application. There'll be a QR code on their screen. The merchant, the vendor will have a reader of that QR code. And they'll make the transaction just like that. And it'll be based on whatever the dollar value of the Bitcoin is for that particular day. And wow, that's the point that it's going to reach within, I would say, within the next 2 to 3 years. You're going to see that common, very, very common.
That's
on the web, you're going to find that it's only a matter of time before Amazon and eBay and all of the big boys start accepting it.
Yeah, I'm surprised Amazon hasn't done it already.
Well, it's just the thing that's holding up a lot of people from accepting it, vendors, is the volatility of the coin.
Yeah.
The price can easily drop 10% in one day. I've seen it drop more. I mean, it can go up as well, but you know, when you're in business,
it's down 66%.
Yeah, exactly. The marketplace that I'm working on, we're actually going to have a stable priced coin. And that's why we're really excited about it. And we think that it's going to do very, very well. So, you know, that's about as much as I can say for 1 hour. But I'll come back on again and, you know, and talk some more about it, or bring a friend of mine on who is, you know, even more expertise. There's a guy, if anybody wants to write this down, there's a guy to just Google him, Andreas Antonopoulos. To me, I consider him to be the Bitcoin master.
Say that again. What's his name?
Andreas Antonopoulos. Antonopoulos.
Okay.
He is brilliant. And, I mean, what he does is he just travels around the world and speaks at conferences, at meetings, you know, all kinds of places. And just, you know, basically explains what Bitcoin is and where it's headed and tries to help people understand it.
Great. Jeff,
and,
will you,
you know,
help
I started
us?
Listening when I first started listening to him, I mean, you know, it would be like, you know, he would be there would be like maybe 50 people in the audience. Now, you know, he speaks at, you know, conferences where there are 4,000 or 5,000 people.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Jeff.
Oh,
we're running out of time, and it's been incredible. I mean, the questions have been great, and you've been able to deal with them, which is great.
Yeah.
It's an important thing if it's going to, you know, if you want to put money into it or put yourself into it, you got to have the information. And like you said, you got to research this.
So, yeah. I mean, I tell everybody this. I mean, just like for a long time, people who were, you know, serious investors that who want to hedge their investment in case of a crash to buy precious metals. I say the same thing with cryptocurrency. Just, you know, even if you put 1-2% of your portfolio into it, It's a smart move. And
all right, well, on that note, Jeff, on the possibility of financial destruction, we gotta move on, and we greatly appreciate your time, Jeff.
Oh, sure. I'm glad I could be here.
All right.
Yeah, we'll have you back again.
Okay.
And that's the end of our show, folks. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Vinny.
Thank you, Rodney. Thank you, Robin.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks,
Alan.
Thank callers. Yes, the callers. It was great. And
it was fun.
Once again.
Until next time.
We'll see you next week. Peace to you.